Hey everyone, welcome back to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy. Welcome to 2026, and actually welcome to season six. And what a way to kick this new season off. My guest today is the one and only Patrick Lencioni. He's the best-selling author of over 13 books, selling over 9 million copies worldwide, and is most well-known for his book, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. Today, specifically, we're going to focus on two of Pat's books, which I think are especially relevant for our industry, The Ideal Team Player and The Six Types of Working Genius. In this episode, you're going to learn how to attract the ideal team player for your business, looking into three different key virtues and the common archetypes that actually show up when someone's missing one of these virtues and how to work with them on this. And finally, how to identify the six different types of working geniuses when you're trying to figure out who should sit on what seat of the bus within your organization. Plus, Pat's team was kind enough to offer us a discount code for both the ideal team player and the working genius assessments that he offers for all of our listeners. So make sure you check that out in the description. We've got an incredible season lined up for you guys this year. So if you haven't already, be sure to hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. Now, let's get into it with Pat Lencioni. You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less. Pat Lencioni, welcome to the show, my friend. Thank you for coming on.
It's great to be here. This is going to be a party. I really mean it. I'm excited.
This is a good day. We've already been prepped. Well, I don't know what we did for prep here. It didn't last half an hour, 20 minutes, but it was a lot of fun. We should have recorded half of it. Good. We've got lots to get into. I reviewed a ton about the books you've put out. The Five Dysfunctions of a Team is what everybody knows. I wanted to go a little bit of a different angle. We're going to talk today about the ideal team player. We're going to talk a little about working genius. Ultimately, I think for today's listeners, I want to help everybody just understand how do we find great people, place them in great place and in great positions in your organization, and make sure that just essentially we have good, healthy humans working with us and we're not constantly plagued by this, which I think for our industry, we all know it's not easy. It's not easy to find good people, let alone retain them. So we'll get into all things basically people oriented. Pat, on your end, I was curious when I listened to The Ideal Team Player, I noticed the story was based in construction and it caught me right away. Why did you choose our industry to base this book in?
A few reasons. One, I prefer to talk about businesses that are real, that do real things. And I grew up in my business career in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area. And, you know, and there's software companies there and everything else. And half the people that work there don't quite understand what they do. And it's very amorphous and all these are in their IPO and nobody quite. And man, when people build things and do real things, I like that. And I know that people can understand that. I wanted something that people could relate to. I also wanted a business that combined, you know, what we would call blue and white collar. And I love Mike Rowe, by the way. I don't know if you know who Mike Rowe is and all that. But like, this is real work. And it's with our hands, but it's with our minds. And it's strategic and it's practical. And so I just thought that this was the kind of business that people would be able to relate to. My uncle had a construction firm for years. I never worked at that. But I just thought it was real. And I did ask some people to look at it. I'm not an expert in this industry. But with enough people looking over my shoulder and understanding the human beings and how things work, people said it feels real. So I'm glad.
We have a lot of grit. We have a lot of soul. We sweat blood and tears goes into every project we do. And I think it's one of the few industries left where we don't really need to, nor do we really want to put on a mask every day when we go to work. We show up as ourselves and we don't really have any other option. It's just like, it's a bit of a hard job. We can't just hide in an office in a suit and look good and type and we play solitaire. We got to actually put rubber to the pavement.
Exactly. And if you blow off your day, people notice.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, and that makes teamwork very real.
Right.
It's like things have to get done, and productivity, which is what teamwork impacts, is so concrete, literally concrete sometimes.
Yeah, I've noticed it. So I used to run a painting company many years ago. But I remember looking at my team's productivity and some of the teams were painting homes in half the time as others. And it was just and how they worked together, how they communicated, how they understood their strengths. And it was little things, too. Like some people would do trim jobs better than they would roll a wall. And it's like they're all painting. But it's like even what kind of painting? Some have a higher attention to detail. Some are better with the customer. And it's like being able to assemble the right people in the right positions and also just make sure I have people that actually want to work together as a team made all the difference. And I screwed it up a ton along the way too. Like, I remember I hired one girl who, you know, she high attention to detail, but like had her rolling walls, and she was just painting her like ladder, and her budget was way off. And I realized, like, you like to paint, but not in the way that I think we need to meet anyway. So
I love it.
It's good. So we're going to talk about teamwork today. We're going to talk about how to galvanize a team and create really good humans that can all be on the same team, work together, and execute at, say, double the capacity of some of the people that we hire. Is that fair?
I love it.
Okay.
I think I'm ready.
All right. So in the book, Ideal Team Player, there are virtues that you really narrow in on. And this kind of becomes the center of everything that this book speaks to. Hungry, humble, and smart. And so before we go through all of this stuff, I want to start just by defining this. What does hungry look like? What does humble look like? What does smart look like? Because there's nuances to this that I think matter. And I even assumed a little bit, especially on smart. And you're like, no, it's actually a bit more like this. So can we start there? Can you just help define what these things even are?
Yeah. And let me just step back and say, I discovered these slightly by accident. Years ago, I had my own department at a software company before I started my company. So we're almost at 28 years. And when we came up with our core values, that's what we had: humble, hungry, and smart. And we didn't know that this was actually geared towards something. And then after I started my own company as a management consulting firm, I'd go help other companies come up with core values. And they'd ask me about mine. And I'd say, we're humble, hungry, smart. And they go, yeah, we're going to use those too. And I'd be like, no, you're being lazy. You need your own. Come on. And they go, no, we like those. And I didn't understand why until one day we realized that those three things are what make a person a fabulous team player, which made sense because we were a teamwork company. And so there's a universal need for those three things. And what they mean is hunger is just, you're not a slacker. You have a strong work ethic. You want to go above and beyond. That doesn't mean you're a workaholic. In fact, workaholism is a separate thing. It means when in doubt, I want to do more. I like to look at how I can get even better. And I'm not a minimalist. I always go a little beyond what's needed. Because that's just a work ethic. So that's what hunger is.
And is that something that, like, I'm hungry for certain things? So maybe I'm hungry for certain types of jobs I do, but not hungry for others? Or just some people hungry and some people aren't? Is that just like...
That's a great question. There's different kinds of hunger. I love this question. You can be hungry because you just have a personality, like, I'm just a hard worker. Mm-hmm. And there's different personality profiles in their people. They just like, I just always productive and I need to get something done. That's how they're wired.
We're addicted to it. I know, because I'm anyway.
Yeah. Well, yes. And then that becomes where it gets unhealthy.
Yeah, I know.
You know. And then there's other hungry people that are hungry because they love being on a team and they don't want to let their team members down.
Right.
And so they might be like, well, I don't need to work hard, but I'm on a team and they need me. And so I want to be there for them. And so I don't want to let people down. And there's other people that are hungry because they just believe in the mission of what they're doing, right? And any of those can work as long as they're sustainable. But if none of them work, that person is not going to be a good person to be on your team.
There are for sure people that are just not hungry in this world. I have met many of them.
And you know, there's, God bless them. They have a place, but it's not in a company that values teamwork, because right, they're going to let people down and frustrate hard workers.
And what's cool to notice too, is you're saying it's not just about being hungry or not, it's understanding the why behind the hunger and make sure that you have the environment that is going to instill that in them. It's 'cause they might be hungry for a totally different reason at a different career. You're like, great, you're a hungry person, but we don't really have that environment here. And then your hunger dies out.
Exactly. Exactly. So understand that. Now, I think the most valuable one of those three is the team one. It's like, I don't want to be a slacker. I don't want to be that guy or gal on the team that runs less wind sprints after practice. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be the person who leaves first knowing that somebody else is going to have to pick up my slack. And some people are not bothered by that. Most human beings with a good work ethic are like, I don't want to be the first to leave and the one that everybody knows does the least amount of work.
Yeah, I feel that every single day. As an owner of this business, I feel guilty if I'm not working 9 to 5 with my team. And then usually I'm working extra hours on top of that. But it's like, I feel like if everyone's doing it, like, I got to be in it with them. So
Yeah,
get it. Okay, so that's hunger. That's good. So and the next trait you have is humble. How would you describe this? Because I can just think of a humble person, right? But like, what are traits of this person? What how do you smell this out? What is humble in your terms?
Well, a lot of people get this one wrong. Humility is people who are really other-centered first. They're not ego driven. Mm-hmm. Now, but what they aren't also is falsely humble about their skills. So it's not humble to be really good at something and to deny that. Mm. Or to be self-deprecating all the time. And sometimes people say, oh man, she's really humble or he's really humble because he's always deflecting what he's done and he's always downplaying it. And he's like, I'm no good at this. That's actually a violation of humility. And it's often a self-esteem problem because humility is just recognizing that which is true and acknowledging it. C.S. Lewis, who wrote the Chronicles of Narnia and many other things, he once said, humility is not thinking less of yourself than you should. It's thinking about yourself less.
is it like more true objective view of the world? Like, do you have better?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you have a good understanding of yourself and others in this world and where each of us play our part and not trying to just always center it from your perspective only. Is that a good way to put it?
It is. And let's just say you were fantastic at something. You had this God-given ability. You would say, oh yeah, I do. But we don't need to talk about that. But if you want to, I can, but I don't need attention for that. Let's talk about the team. Yeah. And when in doubt, I'd rather give credit to others and to us as a collective whole than bring that into myself.
Yeah, you're just stoked about the whole thing. You're stoked about yourself, exactly. Stoked about other people. It's just like, let's do this.
Okay. Yeah, it's not lacking confidence. In fact, confidence founded in truth is part of humility.
You just mentioned something too. I went past it, but you had said, hey, there's, I don't want to call them fakers, but there's like fake humble. And you smell it. Oh, that's all I have is I smell it. Is there a way to identify it? It's dangerous. Let's talk about this for a second. Cause I've seen this in people. I'm like, you're being weirdly, off-putting because of how you're just like, no, it's not me. And I'm like, yeah, but you sound corny almost. What is that?
Yes. And it's uncomfortable. Well, it can be one of two things. It can be literally they lack self-esteem and self-confidence. Okay. And so they really just can't see it in themselves. And that's not good on a team, mm-hmm. because then that person isn't going to be like, I got it. Like if you're a humble basketball player and the team needs you to score and you see a lane to the basket, go for it. It's not humble to go, oh, I don't want to be the hero. It's like, no, you're going to help the team. So have the confidence to do that. But the more dangerous side is the one who acts like that, who secretly is thinking about themselves or trying to convince you they're not, but deep down inside, they're faking it. Mm-hmm. Now, both are violations of humility, but the faker who's trying to create and like, oh, he really doesn't think much of himself when deep down inside, he's like, I'm going to become the king of this place.
Is this the, we're going to get into it later, is this sometimes traits of a skillful politician or is this totally different even?
Yeah, that's the skillful politician, okay, the person who's using that. And I have a great story that involves Canada, so I can't wait to tell you.
We're a bunch of passive aggressive people, I'll say that. If you want to talk about people that are probably a little bit too humble more than they should be and probably need to be able to be more confident and stand up for themselves and also at sometimes do it in a way that sometimes comes off fake, I will call out our own culture because I'm Canadian. I'm allowed to do it. We are passive aggressive by nature, and it's not the best thing for us. I firmly believe that.
When I have seen some of that, I haven't. I've been in Canada many times, and I have a strong connection to Canada. But in this case, I'll just tell you, it was a guy who was actually the other kind, where he was just, he'd go to meetings and he'd act like he was like, oh, it's all about everybody else. But deep down inside, he was one of the most ambitious people ever. And I joke about it because I said his cover was he was Canadian and nobody thought he would be that way. And so people are like, well, he's Canadian. He wouldn't do that. And every time something happened, people would get fired and he would have a better title. And one day I realized, oh my gosh, that guy's been gaming everybody. And so that's the thing about a person who lacks humility. The skillful politician is sometimes by the time you discover them, there's a trail of dead bodies behind.
Right. Pat, I'll just comment on one thing. I've traveled a lot down to the States and I am a super Canadian. And they definitely underestimate me sometimes. And I'm just kind of have fun with it. I'm just kind of like, yeah, I'm the nice Canadian, but I'm also like, I'm going to kick. So let's go.
Well, that's good. See, that's real humility.
Yeah.
So going down there and feeling inferior is not humility. But going and feeling like it's all about me is not humility. And then faking that it's not all about me when you really believe it, that's the worst. So
it's kind of like what we talked about is it's kind of like a good objective view of reality, of yourself and others, and being able to see like, hey, I know where I'm good, but I also know where everyone else is. And there's so much opportunity in that let's focus on where everybody else is great. And when it comes down to me, like, sure, let's take some credit for it, but let's actually focus on the bigger picture, which is all of us as a team. Yeah. Again, teamwork.
There's a lot of really good, humble Canadian athletes. I mean, like Gretzky was super humble and so good. And he wouldn't go like, I was no good, but he didn't need to tell people. He didn't need to walk around. And even today you see him, his persona is like, I don't feel like I'm all that important, but yeah, I'm probably the second best hockey player ever. Oh, I only say that because did somebody just pass him for goals?
Probably. You know, I'm the worst Canadian when it comes to hockey. Don't even ask me about hockey.
You know, though, the game he got passed, he was there to congratulate the guy, which is fantastic.
Yeah, it's, anyways, this is good. I myself, when I look at humbleness and I feel like I'm a relatively humble human, I try my best to see objective truth in reality and not try and just put my own blinders on. And that's been my kind of tool through it all. And when I meet with people, I kind of put it down to like, are you real? Like, can I actually, when I'm interviewing somebody, I'm kind of like, can I actually get to the real part of who you are? Or are we just doing the interviewee interviewer thing? Or can we actually be real here?
Authenticity and vulnerability are both elements of humility.
Okay.
Like you could say, oh man, I made a mistake, or I'm not very good at that, or you're better than I am at that, or hey, I'm really sorry, I was kind of a jerk yesterday. That is really, and we'll talk about this because I think being able to forgive somebody and to ask for forgiveness is a sign of humility.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There's a motto I've had in my brain for a long time, which is like, I can either be right or I can solve the problem. And sometimes when I want to be right, it's just, I want to be right. So I'm going to willfully force my opinion and my agenda. And it's like, but that's not going to solve the problem. And I would much rather just solve the problem. So can I just get to the fact that like, what's going on with you? This is what's going on with me. Can we find some common ground here and just move forward? Cause I don't need to be right. Can we just fix it?
If you're on a team with somebody and you disagree with them on something that matters, which the things, man, you're built, and you give in to them just to give in, that's not humility.
Sure.
It's not a virtue either. And so we talk about convince or be convinced. And the minute they convince you they're right, you're going to go, oh my gosh, you're right. I finally understand why I was wrong. Or I still don't understand. I got to keep talking to you about this because I'm afraid that if we build it that way, it's not going to work. And so it's humble to hold your ground in pursuit of what works. Now, sometimes you got to go, okay, we've had it out and I will defer, but never at the expense of pursuing the truth.
That's good. There's a balance is what you're saying.
Yes, sir.
Okay. This next one, smart. Now, smart is not IQ smart is what you said in the book. So let's unpack that a little bit. What does this mean?
In fact, there's so many people in the world that I was saying this about somebody the other day. It's like they should trade off some of their IQ points for some EQ points, emotional intelligence. And the most effective people in the world have emotional intelligence more than you've got to have enough, IQ. You got to be smart enough. But there's so many people that are really, really smart, but they don't really understand people. And what I mean here is they go to meetings and they do things and they say things and they don't even understand how it impacts others. They're just shocked by it all. And this is the least important of the three. But if you don't have it, it's still a problem because this is the kind of person who goes to meetings and is not ego driven and is not lazy. So they're humble and hungry, but they just piss people off a lot or create problems. And after the meeting, you got to kind of clean up or you have to go, hey, he doesn't mean it. Or she's really, that's not a bad, she just doesn't understand. So, but it creates work. You got to clean up after them. You got to constantly interpret things and say, she didn't mean it that way. Or he really is a good guy.
Man, Pat, you have no idea what you're speaking to right now when it comes to some people. I get it. Like, and it's, I am the guy, I'm the one cleaning up the mess. And it's a lot of work. And they're amazing humans. They really are.
That's the thing. I have the most time and energy for these people.
Yeah.
Because their intentions are good. They're working hard and they're not, it's not ego. But sometimes they looks like that. It
appears like ego. I've had people say it's ego. I'm like, it's not. Yes. I know this person inside and out. But I know what they're saying is true and it's so good. But the way they said it just pissed everybody off. And now I've got to reframe it. And I'm the marketing sales guy. So I've got to find all the ways to say things. And I'm just like, this is a lot of work. But it's still worth it, actually, at some level. I'm working through it because it's the right thing to do.
I have this friend from Minnesota and she was a dear person, but like literally she would say to people, they would say something that they didn't. She'd go, oh, I didn't know you were vain, eh? I was like, that's not how you say that. and it was like, oh, I didn't mean it in a bad way. But I will say this. I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I think there's a lot of Canadians that have this.
Right.
Or at least when they deal with Americans, they can say things that kind of sound, they're innocently saying something, but the way they say it could come across like, whoa.
What the f- did you just say?
And they're like, oh, what? Did I? What? Oh, hey, man. I mean, I didn't mean anything by it. And I'm always like going, are you just saying that because you wanted to do that? And most of the time I find them to be pretty naive about it, but sometimes they say things in a way that could be misinterpreted.
You know what, Pat? I'll say this. It in Canada versus US is a good example. I actually think it's deeper than that. I think there are cultural differences sometimes and core value differences in how you were brought up and how you see the world. And so then you say something that in the world you grew up, you're like, this is totally normal. And then everyone else around you is like, that's not how we do it in this country. And it's just like, I didn't realize that.
That's a better way to say it. And similarly, an American could go up there and they could be from New York and it would be like, you're an excuse my French. And they're like, oh, no, I didn't mean it that way, man. I was just like, come on, don't be stupid, man. And it's like, oh, no, they really aren't saying you're stupid. That's just the culture. I think that's a great point.
So go ahead, sir. Keep going.
Well, it's better to attribute that to a person culturally not understanding. It would be like culturally not smart, as opposed to ego or laziness.
Okay.
So that's interesting. I've never thought about this before. Internationally, humble, hungry, and smart. Smart would mean you know how to interact with people in that culture.
Yeah. Well, you can. So I travel the States all the time, and it's taken me a little bit to understand the United States culture. As a Canadian coming in, I was like, they're just a bunch of capitalists. Like, we're, it's like, we have free healthcare. And then I've gotten down, and I'm like, oh, our healthcare is actually really not that good. And like, oh, you know, like this American spirit of freedom and like wanting to charge for what's truly right is actually really admirable. And I'm like, oh, we never fought for our freedoms, and they did. There is a cultural difference in that. The fact that you went to war to earn your independence actually created a shift in how the American culture lives versus the Canadian culture. And neither is good or bad. It created a difference in how we see virtue. Anyway, it shocked me. And that was one of my big lessons, just working down the States a lot. But it took EQ to do that. It didn't take IQ. It actually took a lot of just like openly learning and listening, objectively listening actually to many different types of people and different perspectives to see, okay, like how does this fit with my worldview and is that okay? And I fundamentally don't think anybody is insane. There's a few insane people, but there's not a ton of them. Everyone's doing what they think is truly best for how they see the world. And my job is just to try and understand it a little bit better so I can kind of relate. And then, just like try and make sure that we can find, again, common ground. We can find something that we can work together on. So
I love it. That was very interesting. I've never talked about that in a conversation like that before, but I think that's really cool.
Okay. All right. We've spent a lot of time going through these three virtues, but that's okay. I think they're good. This is fun. How do we spot these in people? So when we're going through the interview process and we're trying to attract them in job ads, or we're looking at the interview questions we ask, we've talked a lot of lots of examples. Is there any just kind of like simple things that we could do to make sure we're identifying this in our interview process or attracting people?
It really is the interview process because it's really tough. Everybody's like, I'm looking for a job. Everybody interviews saying, hey, if it's a great opportunity, we're a caring environment, we're team players and all that. And so everybody says, okay, I want that. But then when you interview people, you really got to look for things. And when I say, I really believe this, when you're looking for humble, hungry, smart, don't do typical interviews. Don't like get their resume out and go, okay, so it says here, so this, or ask them the easy questions. I call it the Law and Order school of interviewing. You know that show Law and Order? Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen it?
Yep.
Where, you know, ka-kung, this is the case of the people, you know, whatever else. And I always noticed they'd go out to interview a perp and they'd go, did you kill her? No, I didn't kill her. Did you kill her? No, I didn't kill her. The third time they asked, did you kill her? Okay, I killed her. You know, it was like, you keep asking the questions in different ways and until you're satisfied, keep asking. And don't do a typical interview. Take them someplace where you're going to see them outside of the normal environment. Mm-hmm. And in the book, The Ideal Team Player, they do that. And it's like, see how they treat people, not during an interview, because everybody can practice that, but go shopping with them. I remember there was an executive at a big company who said he would go take people to breakfast to interview them. And he'd get there early. And he would literally tell the server, I'm going to sit down here. The person I'm meeting with, bring them the wrong order. whatever they order for breakfast. I want to see how they handle it. And I mean, that's crazy, right? But the point here is, why do we think we're going to learn if a person's humble, hungry, and smart when we say, so are you humble? Oh, yeah. Now, so when you ask them those questions, try to get them in a different environment and then really probe for these things. Ask them what they've done. And when they say a lot of, when it's all I, that might be an indication that they're not humble.
Right.
Because, and again, I don't want to be, you know, write down the number of times they say I versus we, but sometimes it's like, boy, did they do anything with other people on a team?
Right.
So and see that.
I was saying, you're listening for the subtleties, not the answer to the question, but the way in which they see the answer to the question, or how they perceive, again, the world around them.
You'll ask them the question, like, tell me about a mistake you made or a real weakness you have. And I don't want to, like, and see if they have the capacity for, like, vulnerability.
My weakness is I'm just too committed to my job sometimes. It's like, come on. Come on.
My standards of excellence can be intimidating to others.
Yeah.
That's probably, and you go, is really, how about anything else? If that's all they got, you probably have a good indication they're not a vulnerable, humble person, because everybody sucks at something. Yeah. More than one thing.
I'll tell you one on the smart EQ one. I always ask people, what's the biggest conflict you've ever had with somebody? And then I get them to try and give me a name, the day it happened, how they were feeling during the time, the details of the situation, all that. But the kicker, the only thing I care about at the end is I want to ask them, what do you think they were thinking that whole time? And I want to see, do they have an objective view of how that other person sees things? And did they even ask them how they, like, how their opinion along the way? And all, like, the whole story, I just want to make sure it's a real story. But then once I get there, the last question is, like, what do you think they were thinking the whole time? And did they take time to understand it? And do they have a good objective view of it? Or they're just like, wow, that person was just, they were just a dumb boss. Like, you know what? Like, that's why I'm moving on. It's like, you don't.
How would you, that's fantastic, by the way. Fantastic. I should have put that in the book. How would you react if the person went, gosh, I don't know. I
never asked them. This happens. And I'm like, okay. So you don't have the greatest, like, EQ and ability to understand people because you're just too self-involved, or whatever it is. Usually they're protecting themselves. So they're just trying to think about how to defend and explain versus understand.
But then if they're humble, they go, and it's just a smart issue, they'd probably say, I should have asked them. Yep. Oh, man, I wish I could. I think I might call them and ask them because I should have been interested. That might mean it just doesn't occur to them to do it, which is a smart issue versus an ego issue, which is, I don't really care how they feel. It's all about me.
Yeah.
And you know, something you raise a really, I've never talked about this in an interview because, but it's been years. This book has been out for quite a few years, but sometimes it's hard to tell. Is it ego or emotional intelligence?
Yeah. Well, even when we were talking about, we were cross-referencing the two a little bit as we were going into the two.
It's really important though, because there's a big difference between somebody says, oh, wow, I really miss the boat with people sometimes, but I really don't want to, I really want to be humble enough to recognize the truth, versus somebody that goes, I just don't care what they think because it's all about me.
The difference is intent.
That second one, don't let them anywhere near your company.
The difference is their intent. Did they intend to or not?
That's why humility is the most important one.
Yeah. We're going deep. This is good. All right.
Yeah. I love it.
What have we not talked about for recruiting? Let's talk a little bit about hunger. Okay, go ahead.
On recruiting.
Okay.
And what we say is scare people during the recruiting process, the interview, with sincerity. What I mean by that is this. Let's say you're interviewing somebody and you're not sure they're humble or hungry or what, any of them. Let them know, like, hey, we really look for people that are humble, hungry, and smart. Mm-hmm. And if you are those things, you're going to love working here and we're going to love you. But if you're really missing one of those in a big way, nobody's perfect. You're not going to like it here and we're going to be frustrated with you. So the one I'm still not quite sure about is hungry. So I want to ask you this. Do you really think you want to go above and beyond? Are you really comfortable with putting in extra hours when we need it? When it's for the, we want you to have a life, but there's going to be times when you just got to go hard. And here's the deal. If you are hungry, as I explain this to you, you're going to love it here. But if not, this would be the time to probably take yourself out of the process, because otherwise 2 weeks from now or 2 months from now, you're going to be leaving. You're going to have to be, and you're not going to like it. It will really be painful. In other words, scare them with that level. And they're going to be like, no, I actually like that. No. You should hire me. You'll know. Because most people don't want to talk their way into a job they're going to fail at. Mm-hmm. But we have to have the confidence to say, you will fail if you don't have that. Now, that requires that you have a culture that doesn't tolerate the people not having the values you're looking for.
Yeah. At the beginning of an interview, I set a bit of that stage. I go, look, you can try and like convince me to hire you, and I can try and put on the rose colored glasses because I need someone next week, but we can both fool each other in this. And in that process of that, you're going to lose your job or I'm going to fire you. You're going to have to go back to the drawing board. I'm going to have to go back to the drawing board. So instead of us playing a tennis match of Q&A, can we just agree to both be really like open and real, and together, let's just see if this actually is a good fit. And if it is, I'd love to bring you in. If it isn't, I'll give you advice, but like, let's not do this. Is that cool? Can
Clarity
we agree
is
on
kind.
This? And that's like the start of the interview. So the expectations get set right. And it also opens up the person because their shoulders drop and they're just like, okay.
Yes.
Okay. I can actually talk to you now. I'm like, good.
Clarity is kind.
Yeah. I've heard Clarity that many times
is
before.
Kind. That's great.
Cool. I did want to just one more on the interview thing, which is this hungry. How do you look for hunger? I feel like it's looking at tenacity or it's looking at a initiative, but like what, how do you narrow in on that? Like what true hunger is? Cause again, people could just BS themselves all the time in an interview. Oh. What are signs that someone's hungry versus not when you're sitting down with them?
Well, you got at this earlier in another part of this, but I think it's, I want to hear stories.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go like, tell me times when you went above and beyond.
Right.
And you're looking for specifics. And it's like, so I want to hear times when you had to go above and beyond. You had to do something you didn't think you could do, but you had to do it. And you proved that you could work harder or do more. And when people are comfortable with that, they're going to be like, oh yeah, I do it all the time. Let's see. And they're going to say, I did this. I did this. I don't mind this. I had to work till 10 o'clock at night, four nights in a row. And it was a pain, but if that's what I have to do, I'll do it. You know, whereas people will be like, if they just talk to you in generality, it's like, yeah, I'm coming. So when have you done that? Tell me some. And like you said, ask for names, ask for times. I mean, like for specifics. Mm-hmm. And most people that are BSing that one, it'll be all general. It'll all be word salad. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I find that the devil's in the details. I remember one guy I interviewed years ago and I was like, what's your hardest work experience? And he's like 60 hours a week up in Fort McMurray, Northern Canada, minus 40 degree weather. And I was like, this guy's a hard worker. This is going to be. And I was like, cool. How long did the job last? And he's like 3 weeks. And I was like, oh. And the deeper I went into the story, he was just like, it was terrible. I didn't like it. That's why I'm back down here. I'm trying to find something more comfortable. And as I was like, what I started as a great example of tenacity and like hunger actually was like, the exact opposite. And I was like, okay, so when we get to August and it's like plus 40 degree weather and we're sweating our balls off, you know, trying to paint houses out here, you're probably going to quit on me because past performance constantly predicts future results. But I had to ask more questions and not just assume on the first answer.
I love that. And the thing about it is like he belongs somewhere else.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to be mean, but maybe there's a government job or a company that doesn't demand as much from him, but he doesn't belong at your company if that's required. And that, because if he defines boundaries in a different way than the other people on the team, it's going to frustrate the heck out of people.
Yeah. Okay, let's keep moving. Non-ideal archetypes. So now we're starting to get into when somebody has two of these, but they're missing one. How you work with that person and how you kind of identify that in your team? Because all of us have this. So
right.
The accidental messmaker is somebody who is hungry and humble, but they're not that smart. So they're just kind of like, sorry, just kind of like tipped over the paint can. Like, so who is this person and how do we work with this person?
Well, again, I have the most patience with this. We talked about before, this is the person you have to kind of clean up after and you go, no, she's a great gal or he's a great guy. And he just comes across that way. And the good news is people usually come to see that. And so they can tolerate that too. And this is the one I will tolerate the longest. Okay. Because people can learn to deal with the rough edges of a person when it's not intentional and when they work hard. So this is that person on the team that people just have to get to know, and they're probably not going to be good in sales and they're not going to be as good with customers sometimes. But once you get to know them, you can make that work. Now, ideally, you'll still help them develop EQ and like, hey, let's do some self-awareness things. Let's get feedback from people. And when you're at a meeting, we're going to tell you, hey, that last thing you said was really but we know you didn't mean it. And they're going to be like, really? Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. So you can help them.
Okay.
So that's the accidental messmaker. It's like that wonderful puppy that poops on the floor and knocks over things, but they're worth it. Although hopefully you can get them trained.
It is what you're saying. You kind of bring it out into the open. instead of it making like, oh man, they don't even realize it. It's like, let's just talk about this with you. Let's let the other team talk about it a bit so that we can actually always bring it out in the open. And none of us have to be like chattering about the water cooler later about it. Like we can just.
Well, what I love in a meeting, people can turn to that person because if they know they're humble, you can go, so that came across really bad. You know that, right?
Yeah.
And they're going to go, no, what did I say? And they're going to go, the way you just said that to her made her feel. And they're going to be mortified and everybody will laugh and go, oh my gosh, that's what happens there. And so that's dealable and usually can get fixed.
And it sounds like it's not just about you working with them. It's also giving the team permission to have this conversation around them. Just be like, guys, it's okay. Like, this is a thing. So let's just talk about it openly. You create an environment.
I used to have this thing called the face. I still get it sometimes, but I don't even know what it is, that it's happening. Cause so it's related to this. I wasn't aware of what I was communicating. And so I'd get this face that looked like I was disgusted with somebody and I wasn't even aware of it. And people would just in meetings go, hey, you have the face. And I'd be like, oh really? Oh, I'm so sorry. Like, oh, the face just came out. Whereas if they thought I was really that arrogant or mean, you would never say that to somebody.
Yeah.
But they knew I wasn't aware of it.
It's just Pat's
and
face.
And so they could go, you're doing it. So.
it's Pat's confused face. Again, I have someone on my team just like this, which is hilarious. But it's just kind of like, he also has the face. So anyway, it's good. And I love him. Okay, so let's go to the next one. The lovable slacker. So this is someone who is humble and smart, but they're not really hungry.
I call this the, yeah. This is the lovable slacker is easy to tolerate for too long because they care about the people on the team in terms of they're not ego driven and they're really fun. They know how to apologize well. They're always, but they just aren't going to work hard.
Yeah.
And so we tolerate them for far, far too long. And it's because they're lovable, because they're kind and humble. And I had a guy like this on my team once, and I would go for a walk around the block with him and tell him, you got to work harder, man. You're always the first one out and you've got all these other things going on in your life. We need you to work hard. You see how everyone, and darn it, he would just go, you're right. I know, man. I care about everyone here. You're right. I'm going to do my best. Well, I'm a wussy manager sometimes. I used to be even more so. And like, I'm like, so you're going to have to leave the company when you're good and ready. So you let me know when you are. I mean, I tolerated this guy for years because every time I talked to him, he was so amenable.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, it's still causing people to resent the fact that they're having to do his work.
If they're not going to get hungry, you can't keep them, right? This is kind of the end of it. Yeah,
that is. Now, when in doubt, err on the side of grace and mercy and try to help them. But there's plenty of times when you go, I don't think he wants to work that hard. I don't think she's ever going to. And I've tried to appeal to their teamwork, their personality, the mission. I think it's time to just let them go and find a place where people aren't going to dog them for, you know. And there's places where people can work that don't have to be hungry. I don't want to work there.
McDonald's.
But see, that's the beautiful thing about a culture.
Yeah. I'm thinking of something. So you said earlier, sometimes it's not the right motivator to get that person to be hungry. So if they're not like, maybe they're motivated by the accountability of the team or they're motivated by something they want to achieve. So is it probably fair to go and figure out why they're not motivated first and see if there is a structure within the organization that could change that hunger? And if you can't structurally, then it is time to move them out.
Yeah. And you can't obviously rearrange everything just for that.
Yeah.
But, and then we're going to talk about working genius, but they might just have a personality where they're not getting the very thing that would inspire them. And you could easily adjust their role or change the way they're being managed. And you're going to get a totally different person. And if you can do that, do it.
I'll give you an example of this. I saw this when we used to run recruitments, and I used to have people getting applications, people bringing them to first interviews, people bringing them over to me for final interviews. And then we were hiring franchises at the time. So it was a big franchise pipeline that we were building. And when the team was just motivated by their own goals, it's like, hey, you have to get this many applications this week. Some of them didn't care that much. But as soon as they realized, like, you have to get this many applications so that John can have this many interviews so that we can get this many hires, and all of us have a shared goal now that we all have to achieve. And John's like, bro, like, I need more apps. Like, this has been a hard week for me. I saw some people turn on, and it wasn't for themselves. They were motivated because John needed help and he was impacting him by not doing a good job.
Right. And you can get motivated just by the fact that I don't want to be the one that lets people down.
Yeah.
I think that's a fantastic motivator. That's why I think building a cohesive team is so important, because if you trust each other and care about each other and love each other, you will, you know, you will work hard for each other. Even if the company isn't doing the thing you love the most, or even if your personality isn't necessarily the most rigorous, it's like, I want to keep up with my teammates.
Yeah. And I just had to structure it for him, because it was all true already. Like, him not getting enough apps was impacting John, but the goals weren't established. And so nobody really like took personal responsibility for what their part of the pipeline was. They didn't realize the impact they were having down the line.
And silos are a great way to lose that.
Yeah. And that's what I'd done. I created two siloed of positions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Skillful politician. So somebody who is hungry and smart, but they're not humble. We had spoken to this person earlier.
Canadian guy that was, you know, like, oh, I'm Canadian, eh? I care about it. Oh, you fooled us.
Tell me about this person. Tell me, how do we help this person? Tell me, what do we do? Do we just let them go? Is there something more we can do with them? Is this person toxic? I don't know.
This is the hardest one. You know, there's seven deadly sins. I'm a follower of Jesus. You know, there's seven deadly sins, and the root of all of them is pride. Mm-hmm. So there's lust and greed and all that, but pride is really the one that drives them all. And humility is the antidote to that. And when a person is pride-based, and that doesn't mean you're not proud of your work, but you're like self-centered. Man, oftentimes people have to have something happen in their life to change that. This is probably the hardest one to instill in another person, but you can do it. If you love them enough to tell, and you're like this, to tell them the truth, it's like, hey, you know something? I got to tell you something, Fred. It seems like you're about you, and it seems like you're defining things about with you at the center of the world. I don't think you're the center of the world. We want to make the team the center, and you're an important part of that. But I worry that you're not able to set aside your ego for the good of others. You could be that could be the one most wonderful thing you do for that person in their life. And it's quite possible nobody's ever challenged them around that. And that might very well be that moment. They're like, oh my, I don't want to be that way. So, but there are people that are that way and they don't want to stop being that way. And if you know that that is true, it is best for everyone, even that person, to separate. But don't do it without giving them the grace of hearing the truth.
I'm going to tell you a funny story. When I was 18 years old, I was being interviewed to run a franchise with a company called College Pro Painters. And I was young and I was cocky and I was like, I'm going to go do this. And when we finished the interview, I said, you know, what's your feedback from all this? He's like, Danny, everything's good. You got tenacity, all this stuff. He's like, but you're like, really, like, you don't see your own faults. You tend to like point the finger out and blame other people all the time for your mistakes. And I was like, I don't do that. Right. Like, and he's like, exactly. And I was like, oh, and he caught me.
What a gift.
And that
is a gift. Most people don't want to do that.
Dude, it was the best catch ever. And I was like, oh God, you're right. And he's like, look, I'll take a chance on you, but I need you to do one thing for me. I was like, what? He's like, I need you to, every time something happens, because you're going to be running the business, you need to take some semblance of blame. So if you don't want to take 100% blame, take 80%, take 50%, hell, take 3%. I don't care. I want to know what percent of blame you have in every circumstance that happens around you in your organization. And that's going to be the only thing that's going to save you from being successful in doing this or being a failure. And he spoke so directly to me. And I was just like, okay. I was like, you know what? I don't like... Sure. And I don't know if you're right or not, but at least you're onto something. I will do that one exercise for 1 year and see what comes out of it. And it changed me.
Changed you.
It changed me.
We finished the sentence together. You were being shaped by that.
Yeah.
But there was a little trauma in that for you. Like, whoa.
Yeah. Cause I was like, it was so good too. Cause I was just like, there is no way. And he was just like, this is exactly what I mean. You don't see your own faults. And
what
so
a gift. And huge. Let's all, everybody listening to this, let's be that gift to others, whether it's in the hiring process and giving them performance feedback. Cause that might be the very thing that helps them go, I want to change. They need to choose for themselves, but we enable people when we talk about them behind their back and we don't let them know up front. Nobody gets better that way. So that's a great story. And I love it because you took that in and said, I can do that.
Yeah. Thank God I did. I don't think I'd be standing here if I didn't.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah. Okay. So we've gone through a lot of the, here. There's another book you wrote called Working Genius, and I want to touch on it a bit because I think that what we're talking about right now, hungry, humble, smart, is kind of like you said, it's like the values of a person, which should be in every person that you bring on the team or looking to course correct the team to get to the point where we're all a bunch of hungry, humble, smart humans so we can work well as a team. That's universal. What's specific in Working Genius is certain natural, I guess, traits in people that make them good at certain positions in the organization. Can you explain this a little bit? Because
yeah, here's the best analogy I can give you. Jim Collins wrote a book called Built to Last and Good to Great. I love his stuff. And he talked about get the right people on the bus. Okay, the right people on the bus, if you have a company that's on teamwork, is humble, hungry, and smart. Okay. But once you get on the bus, you got to get them in the right seat. And here's the tragedy. You find a person that belongs in your company. They meet the core values, humble, hungry, smart, and whatever else it is. But then you just have them in the wrong job. And you get frustrated with them and they're frustrated. And I've seen this in many companies. And they go and they fire them or they think they should get rid. And it's like, no. They belong here. You just need to find out what their geniuses are and tap into those. And when we talk about geniuses, it's really where they get joy and energy. And there's six choices. That's the thing about Working Genius. There's six kinds of work that are required in building a house or launching a new project or starting a company or planning a family vacation. Any group activity requires six different kinds of work. Okay. And every human being has two of those six that are what we call their working genius, where it's like, this feeds me. This isn't even work for me. I could do this all day and I love it. And when we get people to do much of their job in their working genius, their productivity goes through the roof. Their engagement does, their satisfaction, their customers are happy, their colleagues are happy. When people work in their genius, it's like a different ballgame. But of those six things, two of them are what we call their working frustrations. They're the very things that drain them of joy and energy. And everybody has frustrations. And when people are working in their frustration, no matter how well they fit the culture, no matter what their values are, they're humble, they're hungry, they're smart, and they come to work every day, and the job requires them to do the very things that God made them not to do, even the best person is going to be drained and burnt out. People think burnout is because we're working too much. It's actually because we're doing too much of our work outside of our geniuses.
Mm-hmm. So I feel like in today's world, especially with personality assessments and like we're especially in the contracting space, we're getting more attuned to this. But where I still see the mistake is that every role still requires some of your genius. And then we smash in some of your not the opposite.
Yes.
And it's a killer. And I'll give you an example of sales. Cause I'm in the world of sales since I was a kid and it's like, I love people and I love like exploring relationships and I love, but then it's like, Danny, you got to go put like the paperwork together and put stuff in the CRM. And I'm just like, ugh. Yeah.
And I know you're working geniuses.
Yeah.
And I know what they aren't. So here's the thing. This is an explanation, not an excuse.
Okay.
So what it is, it's every job involves all six letters.
Okay.
Nobody spends zero time in their working frustration. So like two of the working genius types are it goes in a series from up here at 50,000 feet down to 5 feet landing on the ground.
Okay.
There's an architect that's up there going, we should build a pyramid, you know, and there's somebody else that's going, I have to finish the door.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's on either end. I am really bad at the last two, which are called enablement and tenacity, which means just saying yes when somebody asks me for help and finishing things. Does that mean I get to say to my wife and my colleagues, hey, sorry, I don't have those two. I don't have to do this. No, I wrote 15 books and I hated finishing every one of them and I had to. And people had to say, get back in there and finish. So we don't get an excuse, but you know what's great now? They know like, hey, Pat, I know this is your least favorite part of the job. So I don't think you're going to love this or even be the best at it, but you got to do it still. And you know what else people say? They go like, I actually like this. How about if I do some of this for you and you do some of this stuff mm-hmm. that you love for me? And literally people building a house or painting a house. And that's what I love about this. It's so real. People will come along and go, oh, you know that section you have to do there? I love that. And they're going to go, you love that. I hate that. That's my least favorite thing. And they're like, how about if I do that for you and you do this for me? Both of them go home that day, having done better work, more engaged and appreciative of one another. They're on a team because teams are meant to fill in each other's gaps. But if we don't know what our working geniuses and frustrations are, we can't help each other where we need help. And we can't even understand why we're burning out in something that we shouldn't be. So it's not about excusing you from having to do the stuff you don't like, but you're an IG. So selling for you comes easy. Mm-hmm. I have an idea and I love to galvanize people around it. Do you know how many people that work for you would go, please don't make me do that?
I know those people. Yeah. And I'm so stoked.
And you'll go, and you can say to them, okay, here's the deal, Bob. You're going to have a few times when you need to do that. But since that's the very thing that drains you, why would I put you in a job where that's what you had to do every day?
Totally.
Now Bob can go, hey, those days when I have to do something I don't like, I'm going to say, hey, everybody, I'm going in. I'm going to try. But he's not going to have pressure. He's not going to feel guilty. He's not going to be ashamed that he's not as good as you are at something. See, that's the thing about working genius. There's humility built into it. Other people on your team have geniuses that are your frustrations, and you get to celebrate them as being better than you at that. And that changes the whole dynamics of a team. You know what happens when we don't understand our working geniuses? We actually judge people for the wrong reason. We say, they're just not very smart. And it's like, no, they see things differently because of their genius. Or I don't think they have a strong work ethic. No. It's just they're doing the very thing that is hardest for them. When we understand a person's geniuses, we stop judging them and we stop feeling guilty and we have real conversations that are actually humorous. It's like, oh, hey, yeah, I can tell that you must have worked on this. And they're like, how can you tell? Because it's not very good. And you're like, I know, I'm terrible at that. I'm sorry. Without the language of working genius, people don't call each other on things because they think they're criticizing their character when in fact, they're just recognizing the things you're great at or not great at.
One thing I've seen in this, and we call it different things, gifts or like, you know, your genius zone, I guess is a big one, is trying to structure the roles in a company around that awareness. So as your company is growing, new roles pop up and trying not to make one role six different geniuses and trying to really narrow in on like, hey, these are the two to three this one requires. And let's try not to like have a sales manager that's also a production manager that's also doing the admin in the back end that's also helping with the design work because there's too much. And
he or she will absolutely feel like a failure in part of their job.
Yeah. And it's hard for small businesses, especially when the owner starts, it's just them and they got two or three people. Like a lot of time, the owner actually has to wear a lot of these like genius hats and forcefully do it for a while.
But you know what the problem for the owner is? They feel like, well, I'm the boss, so I need to be the best
at everything.
I need to be good at everything and do part of everything. What's a beautiful thing. And this is so, Danny, I can't tell you how crazy this is. When an owner or a leader of an organization does theirs and sees what they suck at, and we don't call it that, but it's what drains them of joy and energy, They actually hire differently. Or they look at the people on their team and they go, oh my gosh, you're genius. You like doing that? And they're like, oh, I love doing that. How about if I adjust it? It's not your job description or your title. How about if we just rethink the way we go about this? And it's 1 + 1 = 5, because suddenly I'm only spending 10% of my time in my frustration. They're only spending 10% of their time in their frustration. Both of us get to increase 30% of what we do in our genius, and everybody's happy. But you can't do that if you don't know what your geniuses are.
I've been doing this with Lauren, my producer. She is so the opposite to me. And we just constantly are like complimenting each other on just like, Lauren, thank you for setting all this up and getting all the logistics ready and finding all the great people for the show. And she's like, Danny, thank you for being in front of the camera because I don't even know why I want to do this. And it's just, it feels like what you're talking about, which is like we found our genius zones and there's a lot of appreciation for one another in the gifts that we are able to bring in our natural way.
Yeah. And giving some language. And that's why this assessment takes 12 minutes. Mm. And it's funny because I have all these friends in business that are like, man, you could charge a fortune for this and use this. And I'm just like, no. I want people to get their kids to take it. I want everyone to take it on their own. And so it costs $25. We have a discount for people listening today, 20% off. So for $20, you can read a report and it takes 12 minutes and you go, oh, crap. No wonder I failed in that job. I felt guilty. My first job out of college, Danny, was I felt so guilty for failing at it. And it was absolutely the wrong job for me. Had I known my geniuses, I would have said, thank you for offering me this job, but I will fail. You will not like me. And I will spend 2 years driving myself into the ground.
It sounds like for a lot of this too, like the solve for it is just being aware of it again. It's just like bringing awareness to what your strengths are, what they're not naturally in you and your team, and then being able to build accordingly. But if you're not even aware of it, you're going to be building with your eyes closed a little bit.
That's right. We had a guy right after we came out with Working Genius like 4 years ago who took his thing. He was going in for his performance review and it was not going to be pretty. And the night before he took Working Genius and he saw his report and he goes, oh, wow. So he comes into the meeting with his boss and his boss's boss, hands him his report and says, hey, I just want to show you guys this. And they go, well, no wonder you're failing. Your best skills are not involved in this job at all. And then they go, we have that other job that's opening up. You'd be great at that. And he goes, I actually got a promotion instead of a demotion because they actually, instead of attributing my struggles to some character flaw that I didn't care, they actually just saw me and said, oh, you're never going to do good in this role.
So you're saying look to make sure people are hungry, humble, and smart. If they fit those boxes and it's still not working out, you have
find a way to use them.
You have a working genius issue and you might actually lose an amazing human because you haven't taken time to actually figure out where they should go. And and I think that happens a lot. I think especially when you're busy in business and you're an owner and you're like low performer, crack. It's like, no, we can't, especially in this industry, we can't afford to let go of great people. And it happens, I think, more often than not because we're not seeing the difference between, are you hungry, humble, smart? Are you in? Okay. You are? Now we got to find the right seat for you. And it's I've always felt this as an owner. Like if I've hired you, like my job is to make sure that you can be successful in your career. And it's the placement, it's the coaching, it's the development around that. But if I'm placing you in something that you're supposed to be defense and you're forward, like I've already screwed you. I've set you up in a losing game. So you had mentioned this earlier. Go ahead.
One last thing I want to say about that, Danny, is so what we're doing now, we're finding people in staffing instead of saying an administrative assistant or I need a contractor. I mean, a general person to run this project. We say, OK, I know you think you know what that means, but look at these six kinds of work. And because for one company, a head of marketing or the general contractor or the administrative assistant has to have totally different skills than another. Mm-hmm. And we use these job descriptions. Like I hired an executive assistant recently, but I re-looked at it and I said, I don't want them just to do what I tell them to do. I want them to look at my world and see around corners and tell me what they should be doing. Well, that required that they had what we call discernment, which is one of the six geniuses. We literally interviewed for discernment because I needed somebody that could actually anticipate my needs and understand, tell me what I shouldn't be doing and what I should be doing. That's very different than in other roles. People are going to say, no, I want somebody just to do, I don't want them to ask any questions. I don't want them to use judgment. I'm just going to give them a task and I want them to do it exactly the way. They're both valid.
Yeah. They just fill different positions to fill different needs.
So.
Okay. We are going to put a link in this for sure. So we'll get a link in the description for everyone listening. Get the Working Genius Aptitude Test. I just took it actually. It's very reaffirming that I should be doing what I'm doing.
Yes.
And get this done for your team as well, especially if you're starting to look around and realize like there's dysfunction and people are in, but there's something wrong with the way that they're doing their role. It could be a bad fit. So make sure you take some time, take those tests. I think that'd be helpful. Anything else you want to speak to that on Pat?
Well, we didn't mention that we just came out with some, we haven't even launched it yet, but you're interviewing me on my book, The Ideal Team Player, The Humble, Hungry, Smart. Mm-hmm. We just put together an assessment. We're going to launch it in a few months. It's live, but we haven't marketed it yet. But if you go onto our website and look for the ITP, the Ideal Team Player Assessment, you can also get a 20% discount on that. And you'll be the first kid on the block to do it.
All right. Can we get a link to it, you think, in our, we can put both in?
Yes, I know we can give you a link and on our website, which is tablegroup.com or workinggenius.com, you can find it. But I'm sure that Matt will work with you guys that to get a link to.
We will let the people who have the working genius of organizing and coordinating our crazy speeches and make sure things actually come through to fruition.
And look at me. I have no implementation skills.
Me neither.
I come up with ideas and then I don't even know how to tell you how to take it.
You and me both, man. Okay. Well, Lauren will be on the back end making sure this works. And I'm sure your team will too.
That's good. Thank God for her and her skills.
Unbelievable. Yeah. I love this team we work with over here at BTA. It's honestly like why we are the way we are. I am too dyslexic and ADD to be able to do like 90% of what this company demands of us. So,
yes. And you shouldn't have to do it all. No leader. And I work with CEOs of companies and they look at this thing and they go, I'm terrible at a couple of things here. And it's so liberating to go, I'm allowed to be terrible at some things and to celebrate other people that do things better than me. And then it suddenly works. Yeah. So it's great.
Yep. I feel very empowered. And sometimes when I get myself into the wrong stuff, I feel very demotivated. So everything you just spoke to, I fully understand. Right. And I think a lot of us probably listening would resonate well with. So, okay. Well, we've taken up a little bit, an hour of your time. Thank you so much. We got so much. Is there any like just last message or thought to leave everybody with where it's just like, look, out of all the things we've talked about, what's like the one thing we should leave after this podcast?
Know yourself and know that you're worthwhile and that don't... Unnecessary guilt and self-attack around what you're not is really bad. You're made to be a wonderful person. God made you that way. Know who you are and allow yourself to work in environments and roles and be known by the people around you. So stop feeling guilty for what you're not.
Can I add to that? Because I feel like there's those who have that, but then there's also those who are angry at the world because they're not like them. Have patience and grace for those that are not like you and realize that everybody fills a role and that the world wouldn't work proper if everybody wasn't super different than you. And that's totally okay. Because I see these two personalities, the one that's self-deprecating is just like, I suck, I'm terrible. And then the other one who's just like, the world sucks, the world's terrible. And they're both toxic.
Right.
And it's the same message, which is like, accept yourself for who you are, but also accept others around you because they fill a purpose and a need. And if you can unlock that, that's a great leader. I think, when you can find the genius zoning in anybody that's around you and know whether you in your company or not, but it's like know whether or not they fit that puzzle piece. That's how you build a real team versus just, I want to be able to just get the best and the top. And the it's like, no, there's human beings that you might be like, this person has worked at McDonald's for 20 years. What use are they to me? And I'm like, they've worked at McDonald's for 20 years. Tell me more about that. What kind of training they go to? And it's like, there's something in that. And I've sounds one of the top franchisees ever hired. This is the guy. It wasn't 20 years, probably 5 years, but worked at McDonald's. Unbelievable performer, diamond in the rough. No one would have seen him, but I saw him for who he was. So anyway,
I love it. You're doing a great job. I will finish by just saying this. I'm so impressed by how you're using all of this and other things that you're doing. It's wonderful. You're out there making people's lives and their work better. And so I'm really honored to be here.
Pat, that was an awesome chat. We probably went way off script and did all the whatevers, but that was awesome, dude. Like, I appreciate just having fun with you today. So, okay. Thank you for your time. Everyone else, go get the downloads and start to work on these things with your team. I will be doing the same. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our podcast, consider sharing this episode with another contractor that you think needs to hear it.